We're reading from 10th Canto, 20th chapter, verses 32 to 39. And I'll sing verse 32. Evam nivastos tasmin namakeshavayor vijayasharat samabhavad vyadha sacham vapao Parushanilam. While Lord Rama and Lord Keshava were first dwelling in Vrindavan, the fall season arrived, when the sky is cloudless, the water clear, and the wind gentle. Mukham makarati vachalam dangaranam karateyami yakipantaham vande shi guru jinacharanam Om Gyanati Narandasya Gyananjana Shurakaya So what do you remember from the last class? Under the tree they have a picnic in the rainy season. Okay? Rainbow. The Lord is compared to a rainbow. Okay, so the rainbow has no string, so Krishna is also independent of any of the gunas in this world. Anything else? Remember, yes. The kings are compared to the clouds who benefit the citizens. And the wind is compared to the Brahmins who advise the kings to give in charity. Okay, yes?
The moon.
Oh.
Soul.
Yeah, the moon is compared to the soul.
And the clouds.
Clouds compared to false ego.
Which are illuminated by the moon.
Illuminated by the moon.
Which is the illumination is consciousness.
Consciousness. Okay, very good. Yes? Householders, yes. Yes. Leshik.
By the cranes, same place.
The cranes? They just yes.
Similarly, householders who are attached to the families, they stay at home in suffering or happiness. They always remain at home.
So the householders are compared to cranes. They stay in the dirty place, so much problem, but they are attached. One time I was going down the Jamuna. Took us an hour and a half to go down, and we went to one certain point and swam, and then we came back, and there was a crane, and he didn't move for the whole 1 or 2 hours that we still in the same place. It's just like, is it real or is it not real? But it's from Bhagavatam, so we can understand. Okay. Yes, Jaini Tagore. I remember.
The clouds are impelled by the winds.
Clouds. Okay.
It's like the kings, they are impelled by Brahmins to give charity.
Okay, yeah, we heard that. Anything else? Yes? Cows are moving very slowly. But when they see Krishna, they start speeding up. When Krishna plays his flute. Nama? Yes, the trees were thin, but after the rainy season, they blossomed and they got fat. As?
Bones are not visible.
Bones are not visible. That's not one of our analogies. And a fat man. That's an analogy everyone will remember. So the islands disappear in the rainy season. Yes? Krishna gave all his respect to the season. It was very beautiful, coming from his eternal roots. Okay, so now we are leaving the rainy season. We're going to autumn. But before we do that, I just got inspired to read about winter season a little bit. Because we're not going to hear about it, but we're sure experiencing it. Something about the winter season. Hemanta is early winter. Oh. I see, Hemanta. Maybe I'll read it. Oh. Okay, might as well read it. The sweet fragrance of Mahasaha flower characterizes early winter season. It gives shelter to blue jinti flowers. Shukadev spoke the verses of Bhagavatam in many sweet tunes. Similarly, winter, this is actually Hemanta, early winter. This season resounds with the cries of many happy shukas, parrots. So yes, I've noticed the parrots a lot around in the winter season. You do hear them around 3, 4 o'clock. Lots of parrots. Okay. Just as a devotee of the Lord attains peace by the strength of his worship, similarly the bodies of water in early winter gradually become cool from the soft footsteps of the approaching cold season. Lotuses decrease, the nights increase. There's no fault in this because the gopis rejoice during the long winter nights. So the gopis are happy in the winter because the nights are longer. That means they get to see Krishna more. And the other ones aren't so happy because they have less time in the going out with the cows. Have to come back before sunset. And the gopis are happy so there's one good advantage about the winter season. Frightened by the cold season, Surya Bhagavan retreats to the southeast corner and lotuses disappear. Female deer glance about and wander here and there. Sometimes they mistake the emeralds lying on the ground to be fresh sprouts of barley. So they try eating the emeralds. They think it's barley. Frost competes with the heat of the sun for sovereignty over the earth. When the frost increases, the heat of the sun retreats. When the heat of the sun increases, the frost retreats. Pearls, being cold by nature, do not adorn the gopis at this time, but they decorate their hair with kurubaka flowers and rub pollen from lodra flowers into it. Saffron ointments, which heat the body, serve as cosmetics. Heavy clouds of incense fill the pastime cottages, and heating spices enhance the tambu. Throughout this season, the gopis refrain from mentioning any object reminding them of cold. So that's the winter season. Short. Hemanta is early winter. And then the second part is dewy season. There's two parts. Dewy, like dew, D-E-W-Y. That's, dewy season, it says here.
And Swarat is fall.
Swarat is fall, yes.
Swarat.
Sharat, not Swarat. Sharat. S-A-R-A-T. Not Swarat means independent. Sharat. Sharat is for. Okay. So, verse 32. Let's see the picture. We have a very small little picture here of Krishna and Balaram. Looks like they're in a boat. Yes, they're in a boat. Can't go on a boat in the rainy season. Raft. So they're now, autumn has come, the sky is cloudless, the water clear, and the wind gentle. And there's no difference between the part of the sky that was covered, light of the Bhagavat says, and that which was never covered. So it's all one sky now. It's all one. So similarly, when the living entity covered by the modes becomes free from ignorance, passion, and goodness, he becomes one with the Absolute Truth. This is mukti. So now the autumn season is mukti, as compared to mukti, the sky especially. The modes are gone, the clouds are gone, the lightning, the thunder, it's all gone, and now we see the sun. When the cloud of material modes is cleared off, material nature is said to have been annihilated. So the 18 verses are going to describe the fall season now. So starting with verse 32, now verse 33. Fall and autumn are synonyms, means words for the same thing. Fall season, autumn season, they're the same thing. In America we know that, but maybe in England you don't. What do you call it, autumn? Autumn.
Fall is American.
Yeah, it's American, huh? So I guess there were Americans who translated this books here. And so therefore you get fall. Yeah, she was confused. She thought it was a fruit. Sanskrit. Fall. Fall. 33. The autumn season. Now we're going to have verse 33 is right up here. These swans and lotuses, which regenerated the lotus flowers, also restored the various bodies of water to their original purity, just as the process of devotional service purifies the mind of the fallen yogis when they return to it. So this pure water is like the pure minds of the yogis, who they may become muddy during the rainy season of their life. Their minds might become muddy, but then when autumn comes, then their mind becomes clear. So we're waiting for this autumn season to come, when our minds will become clear of all the mud of material existence.
Autumn season is devotional service.
Autumn season is devotional service, isn't it? It's wonderful. There is another analogy that reminded me of in the second canto. It's just when the Bhagavatam enters your heart, it cleans up all the mud. And it's just like autumn rain, it says, autumn rain on the pools of muddy water. And then the Lord, it sits on the lotus flower of your relationship. The Bhagavatam sits in your heart and the lotus flower of your relationship. Just like autumnal rains, they clean up the heart. And so that's what's happening here, autumn. Isn't it?
It's
eighth chapter of second canto. It's also compared to autumn rains. There may be rain in autumn, but instead of making it like, it's not heavy rain that makes everything muddy, but it's light rain that clears the mud. It clears the water. It distills the water. So in light of Bhagavan, it said, we should not be disappointed in our muddy life of material existence. For as soon as we voluntarily take to devotional service of the Lord, our whole life becomes clear like water in autumn. Devoid of our relationship with God, our life is barren. But as soon as the muddy mind is cleared by spiritual association or cultivation of the human spirit, the threefold miseries of material life are at once cleared off. Thus the lotus of knowledge gradually fructifies, and the gradual process of development ushers in transcendental bliss. So what is here in light of the Bhagavat? We've got the water, we've got the lotus, and we've got the autumn season. So what is the autumn season compared to?
Devotional service.
What is the water compared to? No, the water is the mind. It's dirty, but in autumn it becomes clear. So the path of devotional service is autumn. The mind is the water. And what is the lotus? Yogi? Yeah, it could be. Actually, it says the lotus of knowledge. We're going to hear different, actually, interpretations of what is the lotus. So in light of the Bhagavad, it says knowledge. The knowledge grows, it fructifies. The lotus fructifies. When we do our devotional service, our mind becomes clear, and then within our mind, the lotus of knowledge fructifies. So now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has a different opinion, I believe, on what is that lotus. Quite an interesting opinion. So we'll hear what he says about that. Verse 33, right? Yeah. Due to the autumn season, the lotus flowers blossom and lakes become crystal clear. Similarly, by engaging in devotional service, the heart becomes purified and Sri Krishna appears. So, autumn season is compared to devotional service. The lake is compared to the heart. An appearance of Krishna is compared to a lotus. So we have our lotus in our heart, whether we know it or not. We do have a lotus there. And it's meant for Krishna to appear on and sit there. But first we have to clean it. So the cleaning process is compared to autumn season, or devotional service. There's another verse in Bhagavatam which talks about this cleaning process. Famous verse. Shinvatam Sokatam Krishna Punyashavana Kirtan Hridantasto Hibdrani Vitunoti Suritsatam. That the Lord, He's by hearing and chanting, we hear and chant devotional service, and the Lord, He cleans our heart of all the inauspicious things. Of course, if He appears in our heart, then everything inauspicious is going to be clean, just by His appearing in our heart. Yes? Chaitadarpanamarjanam, good. Chaitadarpanamarjanam, cleaning the mirror of the heart. So many things happen after you clean the mirror of the heart. Bhava maha devagni navartam, put out the forest fire of anxiety, material existence. Then Shaya Kayavachand Kavitaranam, the moon, the beautiful moon of benediction moon appears in the heart. Vadya Vatu Jivanam, and knowledge, again the same thing, knowledge comes. So Prabhupada must have gotten that from that. That's how knowledge fructifies. Vidya Vatu Jivanam. No, now rainy season is over. It's another season. Autumn season is after the rainy season. Now everything's clear. The clouds are gone and the water is clear. It's not muddy like it was in the rainy season. The water is clear and the clouds are gone and there's no more rain really just to speak of. It's a different season now. We've walked. In verse 32, we have entered into the autumn season. It may be that it's the autumn forest, but they're none different. We have all these different forests of Vrindavan. Yeah, okay. So Ananda Vrindavan Champu talks about, let's see, 168. Oh, autumn season. Here we go. Krishna relished the arrival of the autumn season with great enthusiasm. There is no need of clouds in Sharat season. So, feeling dejected, the clouds turn their backs and vacate the sky over Vrindavan. Autumn doesn't need them, so they don't feel wanted, so they leave. Everything is personal in Vrindavan. The clouds are feeling very unwanted. And so they go away. One, two, three. Due to separation from her rain cloud friends, the joyful waves of the river danced no longer due to the shortage of water. So the river and the rain clouds are friends, and now she's not dancing anymore. Many small and slow-moving rivulets replaced the gushing main stream of the river, which dried up in autumn. The transparent river water seemed to reveal the pure tendency of her heart. The various migratory birds wandering along the dried banks of the river unconsciously decorated the ground with artistic lines drawn by their beaks and feet. Quacking ducks, storks, chakravakas, and intoxicated swans beautified the river. The beautiful scenery of the Sharat season attracted denizens of heaven. Even Saraswati herself could not describe the extent of Vrindavan's incredible elegance. Acting as an expert dance instructor, now, who is going to be this dance instructor? You'll never believe it. It's the wind. The dance instructor is the wind. And guess who is dancing? The wind directed the pure white lotus flowers to gently rock back and forth in the water. So they're all making a scene for Krishna here. Now the wind is telling the lotuses, move this way, move that way, like that. As it passed over the slowly moving water, the wind became cool and scented with lotus pollen. This gentle aromatic breeze satisfied and enchanted the minds of everyone. Thus the bride in the form of the Sharad season dressed and ornamented herself in order to worship Krishna. Krishna found great happiness in the juncture of the rainy and autumn seasons. Moving with a delightful gait, Krishna pleased all the residents of Braj with his darshan as he took the cows out to pasture. The favorite of Vrindavan affectionately poured his mercy on everyone. As a result, the Brijabasis felt great satisfaction, seeing Krishna strolling along, playing with his friends. Picking up twigs, wild flowers, mineral dyes, and other gifts of nature, the cowherd boys decorated their beloved friend while walking down the road. Okay. The rainy season is beautified with the fan tails of intoxicated dancing peacocks. Similarly, Krishna looks elegant with his crest of fresh iridescent peacock feathers. Rivers stop moving, back up, and swell in all directions to flood the surrounding land with lotus flowers. Although the flooding washes away the riverbanks, they magically reappear when Krishna plays his flute again. And so the riverbanks are washed away, but when Krishna plays his flute, the riverbanks come back. They just appear again. So, very magical land. Very amazing place, Goloka Vrindavan. Vrindavan is amazing. Everything is personal and everything is conscious. Joyful Krishna always gives happiness to everyone. At this time, he suffers in separation from the beloved doe-eyed gopis who have shot him with the arrows of their sidelong glances. Thus, Krishna causes the meeting of the rainy season with the autumn, which brings a fresh taste of rasa. All of this, now autumn is the scene of the drama of the rasa dance. So it's setting the scene. We'll hear more about autumn next year, how beautiful autumn is. Okay, verse 34. Now we're going to get our analogies back from verse 34. Did I read verse 33? Yes. Or no?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Verse 34. Autumn cleared the sky of clouds. Nope, that's verse 33. Let me get the picture. Okay, here we have this picture here. This is autumn. Cleared the sky of clouds. Let the animals get out of their crowded living conditions. Cleaned the earth of its covering of mud and purified the water of contamination. In the same way that loving service rendered to Lord Krishna frees the members of the four spiritual orders from their respective troubles. So this is a very full analogy here. It's compared to the four ashrams of life. So we'll read the purport, last paragraph. In the autumn season, the sky returns to its natural blue color. The vanishing of the clouds is like the vanishing of troublesome duties in brahmachari life. So if you see the clear sky, you think of brahmachari life. No clouds, no problems, no worries. Just after summer comes the rainy season, when the animals sometimes become disturbed by torrential storms and thus huddle together. But the autumn season signals a time for the animals to go to their respective areas and live more peacefully. This represents the householders becoming free from harassment of family duties and being able to devote more of his time to spiritual responsibilities, which are the real goal of life, both for himself and his family. So the animals, in the rainy season, they don't get out. They keep them inside to protect them from the rain. And so the grihastha is in his family life. He doesn't get to go out until the age of 50, when he's supposed to leave family life. So this is the followers of Varnashram. This is referring to the followers of Varnashram society. Removal of the muddy layer and the earth is like removal of inconveniences of vanaprastha life. So the vanaprastha, so many austerities, but then when it's removed, so how do all of these become free? By performing devotional service to Krishna. And the last one, purification of water is like sanctification of sannyas life by one's preaching the glories of Krishna without sex desire. So the pure water is like sannyas. The muddy water, the removal of the mud on the banks is like vanaprastha is getting free. And all of them get free by the same process, by performing devotional service. So Light of the Bhagavat talks about four prominent features of autumn. There is no water in the sky. The weeds that grew here and there in rainy season all wither away. The muddy roads and fields dry up, and the ponds of water become crystal clear. So the weeds that are gone, that is like the grihastha, they wither away. The muddy roads, if you ever try walking or riding a bike or a motorcycle on a muddy road, then you'll have a lot of trouble because you sink. You sink in the mud. even a bicycle will sink in the mud. So that's compared to vanaprastha life. There's so many obstacles. You sink in the mud of your austerities sometimes. So by devotional service, then it is essential. And if you don't have it, then you will, even if you follow the Varnashram society, if you don't have follow, if you don't perform devotional service, then all your duties become burdensome, like in this age of Kali. So in light of the Bhagavad, it says, when the regulative principles have no aim, the Varnas become a caste system, and ashramas become the business of various shopkeepers. And this only can be reformed by cultivation of human spirit in devotional service. So again, form without substance is like the rainy season. It's very, very difficult. They forget the aim again. They forget the aim of the purpose of the austerities. The purpose of everything is to gain attraction for Krishna. And if you don't get attraction for Krishna by performing your austerities, then it's useless. It's not the way to do it. And Nectar of Instruction describes also niyamagraha, niyamagraha, that you don't follow the rules just for the sake of following them, but know why you're doing it and have the feeling behind it, have the bhakti. So verse 35, here we have a Chinese brahmachari or sannyasi, a Buddhist. The clouds, having given, it's a sage actually. The clouds, having given up all they possess, shone forth with purified effulgence, just like peaceful sages who have given up all material desires and are thus free of all sinful propensities. So we have a sage, he's got his staff and his begging bowl.
He's free from all sins.
Free from all sins. He's given up, what has he given up? Given up all material desires. That helps a lot. So, Prabhupada says, when the clouds are filled with water, they're dark and cover the sun's rays, just as the material mind of an impure man covers the soul shining within. So here we have the clouds again in an unfavorable light. They are covering up the sun, and just like our mind is, our material mind covers our soul. But when the clouds pour down their rain, they become white and brilliantly reflect the shining sun. So we give up the material desires and our mind becomes white, like white clouds. Just as a man who gives up all material desires and sinful propensities becomes purified and then brilliantly reflects his own soul and the supreme soul within. So this is... But in light of the Bhagavad, it says, in Kali Yuga, however, the entire system has gone topsy-turvy. The student lives in luxury at the expense of the father or father-in-law. When the educated, indulgent student becomes a householder by the strength of university degrees, he requires money by all means for all kinds of bodily comfort, and therefore he cannot spare even a penny for the so-called vanaprastas and sannyasis. So they're supposed, the grahastha is supposed to support the vanaprastha and sannyasi, but he's trained up to enjoy, so he has no money to help anybody else except his own family. The vanaprastha and sannyasis nowadays are those who are unsuccessful in family life. Prabhupada says, if you can't make it, then take vanaprastha or sannyas.
The source is Kavikar
Report,
we just discussed yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, with
Oh, yeah.
Those who cannot manage their family life, they're brahmachari.
Right. Yeah, one time when brahmachari was complaining about the women, and Prabhupada said, yeah, you're just complaining because no one will marry you. That's why you're brahmachari. So he's talking about that point, that unsuccessful in family life. And in India, you do find that. You'll find... You know, they put on saffron, you know, with one leg, one arm, and they put on saffron and beg, or something like that. So actually in India this is happening. Even this was written in the 50s, or I think, or 60s.
Early
60s. Mm-hmm. So even in the early 60s there were such vanaprastas and sannyasis. Otherwise Prabhupada wouldn't talk about them. Thus, the so-called sannyasis try to construct another home in the name of the sannyas ashram and glide down into all sorts of luxury at the expense of others. So all these varnas and ashramas have now become so many transcendental frauds. Prabhupada was heavily criticizing the caste system. But that does not mean there is no reality in them. One should not conclude there is no good money simply because one has met with counterfeit coins. The sannyas ashram is meant for complete freedom from all anxieties, and it is meant for uplifting fallen souls who are merged in materialism. But unless the sannyasi is freed from all cares and anxieties, like a white cloud, it is difficult for him to do anything good for society. So this is... Now, Sanatan Goswami has another comment. It's not only giving up material desires. Dry knowledge also has to be given up by the jnanis. Dry knowledge is equal to sin because it's an obstacle to devotional service. Heavy, heavy, Prabhupada says. And he says, comparing the pure effulgence of the cloud, just like the jnanis who become devotees, they shine forth more than previously. So these peaceful sages are jnanis who become free of their dried knowledge as well. Not only sinful activities. So this dry jnana is also sinful activity. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has a comment on this verse. As munis become purified by giving up all sinful propensities, mukti kilbishala, and material desires, chakdai shana, to attain sons, wealth, and followers, similarly, after expelling all their rain, the clouds become pure and white in color. This is a positive analogy. 36. Oh, this is another good analogy. Full page layout on this. During the season, the mountains sometimes release their water, pure water, and sometimes did not, just as experts in transcendental science sometimes give the nectar of transcendental knowledge and sometimes do not. Purport. First part of this chapter describes rainy season, and second part is autumn, which begins with the rain when the rain stops. During the rainy season, water always flows from the mountains, but during autumn, the water sometimes flows and sometimes does not. Similarly, great saintly teachers sometimes speak expansively on spiritual knowledge, and sometimes they are silent. The self-realized soul is closely in touch with the Supreme Soul, and according to his desires, a competent spiritual scientist may or may not describe the absolute truth, depending on the specific circumstances. Who can give me an example of why a saintly teacher will sometimes speak and sometimes is silent? What is an example of that? Abhay?
Inspiration of the super soul.
Inspiration of the super soul, okay. Yes? Yes. Yes, this is actually the point of the verse. It depends on the qualification of who they are speaking to. So according to the qualification of the hearer, he will be silent or he will speak. If the hearer is not qualified to hear something, then he won't speak about it. So what's an example of that, an unqualified hearer? Yes? Right. It's an offense to the holy name to explain the glories of the holy name to the faithless. So that's an example of an unqualified, someone who is faithless, who will simply blaspheme. That's an unqualified hearer. Yes.
Someone who has a challenging mood.
Challenging mood, not submissive. Now, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, this verse is quoted in 11th canto, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati speaks extensively that this describes a second-class devotee because he relates in four different ways with four different classes. He preaches to the innocent, he avoids the atheists. So this verse can refer to a Madhyama Adhikari who will not speak to the atheists, but he will preach to the innocent. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also confirmed a Vaishnava should be indifferent to those envious of the Lord. So this is 11.2.46 purport. It's a big purport, and it's all right on this point here. When to speak. 11.2.46. It's all on this point. It is seen when such persons are informed of the glories of the Lord, they attempt to ridicule the Supreme Lord, thus further deteriorating their polluted existence. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes from this verse to prove this, to explain how the Madhyama Adhikari, why he does not preach to the atheistic person. This they will simply blaspheme. Jiva Goswami has mentioned, although the first-class devotee may at some times exhibit apparent hatred toward the demons because of entering the mood of the Lord's pastimes, the intermediate devotee should avoid such feelings. Don't imitate the Uttama Adhikari and go try to kill the demons. Furthermore, the intermediate devotee should not in any way associate with the powerful atheistic class of men because there is danger his mind will become bewildered by such association. According to Śrīla Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, if a Vaishnava preacher encounters one who is envious of him, he should remain far away from such an envious person. But he may meditate upon ways to save the envious class of men. Such meditation is called sad-achar, or saintly behavior. Śrīla Jīva Goswāmī mentioned Prahlāda Mahārāj as an example. And there is a verse by Prahlāda Mahārāj, I believe in 5th canto, where he says, may all the envious people in the universe be pacified. So, yes. He knows it. Tell us the verse. Yeah, I don't know it. Yeah, so. Mm-hmm. Yes,
he
yes.
Those two verses, this one and one before.
Because Rabindranath Rupa, we used a verse during
the
gathering of.
Yeah, 9/11. After 9/11, then all the leaders of different faiths got together, and this was the verse that Rabindranath Rupa, he represented ISKCON, and he spoke in that verse, let the envious be pacified, envious persons. So this is, but that doesn't mean we go and preach in the glories of the Lord to them. We don't directly speak to them about Krishna, but we can pray for them. So that's this verse. So there is, even though they may not speak, they're still praying for them. So we don't think, because sometimes people criticize the preacher, that, you know, why you avoid the atheists, you should see everyone equally. Śrīla Bhakti Siddhānta Saraswati has given an elaborate explanation to prove discrimination employed by a Madhyama Adhikari preacher does not show lack of mercy. Upeksha, or neglect, is the proper medicine for those who are inimical to the Lord and his devotees. Indifference from the preacher checks feelings of hostility on both sides. Like if he says something, he starts blaspheming, you might get angry. Oh, what are you saying about Krishna, about my guru? So if you're indifferent, then what's he going to say? There's nothing for him to get a hold on, to make you angry. So that's why indifference is recommended, upeksha. Although there is a Vedic injunction, one should cut out the tongue of a person who offends the Lord and his devotees, in this age it is best simply to avoid potential offenders and prevent them from committing further sinful activities against the Vaishnavas. So, yes, now we should just avoid upeksha. Because in this age, everybody is an offender, almost. I mean, it's very rare to find an innocent, submissive person in this age of Kali who loves to hear what you're going to tell him in your preaching. It takes some purification, often, before they're willing to hear this philosophy. Some prasad, some harinam, something. So then Śrīla Bhakti Siddhānta Saraswati goes on to say, he has strongly rejected those foolish persons who, under a plea of mercy and equal vision, perceive that a faithless person is also a devotee of the Supreme Lord and who thus try to thrust the Harinam upon such offensive people. Śrīla Bhakti Siddhānta has stated, when childish people think themselves Mahābhāgavats and act in defiance of the Vaishnava spiritual master. Such behavior simply holds them back from receiving the mercy of the Vaishnava guru. Bewildered by false ego, these self-proclaimed devotees gradually become fit to be ignored by pure devotees on the intermediate platform and are cheated of the mercy that comes from the devotees' satisfaction. Thus they become asadhu by constantly committing offenses against the devotees who preach the holy name of Krishna. Pure devotees in all circumstances display indifference to those who falsely imagine themselves to be Vishuddha Bhaktas or pure devotees of the Lord. So there are many pretenders. So they should also be neglected. Not only the faithless, but those who are pretending to be Uttamadhikaris, giving up all the rules and regulations, and just taking Babaji or whatever they do. In other words, those who criticize, as he says, the indifference is an excellent manifestation of their mercy. In other words, those who criticize the Vaishnava preachers on the second-class platform for discriminating between those who are fit to receive the Lord's mercy and those who are envious are misunderstanding the mission of the Lord. That's all this one purport here. Huge purport. Wonderful purport. Yeah, if you want to find out about, you know, why we avoid the envious, then all the arguments are given here in this purport. Now he quotes, Jiva Goswami has pointed out, even though the Mahabhagavat devotee may act on the second-class platform for preaching, his rejection of the envious living entities does not obstruct his vision of the Lord as all-pervading. He said, this one's a demon, this one is envious. So why don't you see Krishna everywhere, some people may say. Doesn't obstruct his vision. Rather, when a first-class devotee or second-class devotee rejects the atheistic class of men, he is expressing the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A first- or second-class Vaishnava never actually becomes envious of another living entity, but out of intense love for the Supreme Lord, he becomes angry when the Lord is offended. Also understanding the Lord's mission, he discriminates according to the position of a particular living entity. So there must have been some criticism at that time of Śrīla Bhaktisiddhānta, even Jīva Goswāmī. At that time, there must have been criticism of devotees who would discriminate who to preach to and who not to preach to. To consider such a Vaishnava preacher an ordinary envious person, or to consider him sectarian because of his proclamation of pure devotional service as the most exalted of all methods of spiritual advancement, reflects a materialistic vision called Vaishnava Jatibuddhi or Gurusu Naramati. Although a Mahabhagavat sees every living entity as a pure spirit soul, such a Mahabhagavat still experiences special ecstasies and other symptoms upon meeting another Vaishnava. So here's the third part. You neglect the envious, you preach to the innocent, and you have friendship with devotees. So even if you're a Mahabhagavat, still, he loves to meet devotees. He appreciates association of devotees. You don't never grow out of that. This is not contradictory to his vision as a topmost devotee. Prabhupada is very practical. He said, we don't embrace the tiger. We don't embrace the tiger. So a pure devotee sees every living entity as part and parcel of Krishna, therefore expresses his love for Krishna through love for all the expansions and creations of Krishna. Still, such a Mahabhagavat feels special ecstatic love upon seeing another living entity directly pleasing the senses of the Supreme Lord. So, Light of the Bhagavat is going to tell us another way to see this analogy. Who are the people who are like the rain waterfalls that never stop, and who are the people who are like the water that sometimes stops and sometimes goes? And guess who they are? We have the professional reciter, and the other one is the acharya. The professional preachers are like rainfall from the sky, but the acharyas are like waterfalls. The professional traders in Bhagavatam and Ramayana will speak from the portion of the scripture that will appeal to the mundane senses of the audience, like Ras Lila. And they will earn money from their so-called admirers. But Acharya will never speak on Ras Lila to the general mass of people. Ras Lila chapters are most confidential, meant for advanced students of spiritual realization. So the Acharya knows the scriptures well, teaches his disciples in terms of the disciples' capacity to understand and advance in spiritual realization. Therefore, he sometimes speaks and sometimes does not speak. Although rainwater and the waterfalls are the same, the water from the waterfall has a different effect than ordinary rainwater. One should not accept messages from the professional men, as one should not accept milk touched by the tongue of a serpent. Milk is good, but as soon as it is touched by the snake, it becomes poisonous. The Acharya, therefore, is not a mercenary order supplier like the professional reciter of scriptures. Okay. And if you want to get more confused, Sridhar Swami has another way of looking at the analogy. He compares the ones who stop to the jnanis and the ones who keep teaching to the karmis. So, Sridhar Swami. Now, Sanatana Goswami says, sometimes the water is auspicious and pure, and so they release it. Sometimes not pure, but rather dirty, because hardly any rain, they were keeping only that water which remains from the floods. Just like those who know the truth of Gyanamrita, at the proper time, devotion, when their disciple develops extraordinary love, they give it to him. Other times, they give insignificant knowledge, dealing with subject matters of the soul, and so forth. You see this in Mahabharata a lot. Someone will come to the guru, and he'll just teach them something about karma. And then if the guru is satisfied with that, the disciple is satisfied, he goes away. But if he's not satisfied, he wants to know more, then the guru will tell him about Brahman. But only special, special cases will you get devotional service. Very confidential knowledge. Okay. Yeah. You'll find out when you get there. Yeah.
So it seems like, it's going to be genuinely inquiring on that level.
Yeah, when you're ready.
Yes.
When you're ready to give up everything, then you'll find out what your sarup is. When you're ready to give up what's covering your soul, all the coverings, there's so many coverings. False ego is the last one. So when you're ready to give up all of that, then you can find out what is your sarup. Not just cheaply, you're this, you're that. And then you go on with your material life. Like is what is being done now in Vrindavan. Some Babaji's will tell you are this. What use is it to you if you know you are this? What's the use? Because you're not that. You're in a different mood. You're not in that mood of who your sarup is. So to be in that sarup requires quite a different way of life than what we're doing. It means, unflinching, all that you hear in the scripture, ahaitukiya pratihata, without stop, without cause, unflinching devotional service. We flinch sometimes when we do devotional service. But if you really want the actual thing, then you have to pay for it. It's not a cheap thing. And so they know who is ready and who is not. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti has his comments. The Gyanis like Narada, Jada Bharat, and Prahlad give the nectar of knowledge, instructions about the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to such persons as the hunter, Rahugana, and children of the demons, but otherwise they do not give such knowledge. This analogy is accepted as favorable by those who want to become successful in life. Okay. So now we're back to the poor householder in verses 37 and 38. And he's compared to a fish swimming in shallow water. And the pictures are the same for the both of the verses. We've got some beautiful fish here. And in the first picture, it's shallow. And in the second picture, it's even more shallow. Because all the small puddles are going to dry up in autumn season. They enjoy it during the rainy season, but now in the autumn of the life, after autumn comes winter. So old age, you start drying up, your enjoyment dries up, and then death, winter, becomes winter. So you hit the autumn of your life, and then you see. Verse 37, the fish swimming in the increasingly shallow water did not at all understand that the water was diminishing, just as foolish family men cannot see how the time they have left to live is diminishing with every passing day. So the water, diminishing water, is compared to our diminishing life. Shallow water is pettiness. According, we'll hear that from Light of the Bhagavad. Purport, after the rainy season, the water gradually goes down, but stupid fish do not understand this. Thus, they are often stranded on the lake shores and riverbanks. Similarly, those infatuated with family life do not understand the remainder of their life is constantly decreasing. Thus, they fail to perfect the Krishna consciousness and are stranded in the cycle of birth and death. So, stranded on the shore. Cycle of birth and death. Light of the Bhagavat, Prabhupada talks about foolish politicians who never retire, even if he's enjoyed his post. The older he gets, the more he's attached to his false prestige. Even at the fag end of his life, he thinks everything will be spoiled without him. He is so foolish. He does not see many other politicians who thought like him have come and gone with no gain or loss for want of them. These family men, big and small, are like the small fish in the pools of water that gradually dry up in the autumn. So the next time you see an old politician, you can think about the fish swimming in the shallow water. He's old, his life is finished, and he's still trying to swim and enjoy in the shallow water. They are foolish because they think their attachment to their family, even at the end of their lives, will be able to protect them from the cruel hands of death. Sanatana Goswami says, because they're swimming in shallow water, they should be understood as petty. And therefore, they don't appreciate the water is diminishing. So two adjectives are describing the householder, petty and traveling in shallow water. So 38 is the same idea. Just as a miserly, poverty-stricken person, overly absorbed in family life, suffers because he cannot control his senses, the fish swimming in the shallow water had to suffer the heat of the autumn sun. So not only is the water getting shallow, the water is getting hot. In autumn, I experienced that when I swam at Kusum Sarovar in August. The water is so hot, you can hardly swim, can bear it, can hardly tolerate it. And you feel little pockets of cold. Then it's nice, but it's actually very hot in the water, almost intolerable. So that's how it gets, poverty-stricken person in family life. Purport. Although, as described in the previous verse, unintelligent fish are not aware of the diminishing water, one may think these fish are still happy, according to the old proverb, ignorance is bliss. But even the ignorant fish are scorched by the autumn sun. So ignorance may be bliss, but you still get scorched. Similarly, although an attached family man may consider his ignorance of spiritual life blissful, he's constantly disturbed by the problems of family life, and indeed his uncontrolled senses lead him into a situation of unrelieved anguish. And so Light of the Bhagavat says, this verse talks about poor householders, those who are poverty-stricken, or those who cannot control their senses. When Kripanas have too many children, they suffer the scorching heat of family life. And then similar leaders advise them to undertake family planning. The idea is sense pleasure should not be curtailed, but birth control should be accomplished by artificial means. This is a sinful act. And there are specific hell for those who commit such sins, Prabhupada says. Attention of a human being should therefore be drawn to the cultivation of the human spirit. So he repeats this again and again in this book for the Japanese, cultivation of the human spirit. We must cultivate the human spirit. So Sanatana Goswami says it's not the fish were happy because they were in ignorance, or they were free from fear because they didn't know the water is diminishing, but they suffered great distress. Why two verses? To make firm the idea how they receive suffering and to show how those who travel in deep water, the devotees, do not experience the same. So devotees should travel in the deep water. According to, who said that? Sanatana Goswami. They are not Kripana. So here in Sarartha Darshini, verse 38. Now, he's the one who distinguishes between the two verses. As a poor man suffers while supporting a large family. So this verse is about poor people who have lots of children. So the fish in scarce water must endure the painful heat of the autumn sun. In the previous verse, a wealthy family man was described. And so he's just a fish ignorantly swimming in the shallow water. Whereas here, the negative effects of a poor family man are described. That's one way to understand. Or this verse can be taken to refer to the suffering of the attached family man mentioned in the previous verse. So two ways of seeing it. Now, before it was a rich man, now it's a poor man. Or else it was an ignorant rich man, or an ignorant man, and now it's, even if he's ignorant, still he has to suffer. He doesn't get liberation from ignorance. So we have to go deep into the water of Krishna consciousness. And then we'll be happy. That's the only deep water. Otherwise, it's all shallow. It's all surface, skin deep. Verse 39. Gradually, the different areas of land gave up their muddy condition and the plants grew past their unripe stage. We have to have a picture for this one now. Verse 39. Okay. That's this one here. At the bottom. At the bottom. In the same way, sober sages give up egotism and possessiveness. These are based on things different from the real self, namely the material body and its byproducts. So all we have to do is give up the disease. We've got a disease of false ego, heart disease. Is that very difficult to give up? Yes.
False ego.
Heart disease. Purport, the word adishu in this verse indicates byproducts of the body like children, home, and wealth. Very difficult to give up. Light of the Bhagavat. So in the last purport of the Light of the Bhagavat, it was describing the ignorant householder. So in this purport of Light of the Bhagavat describes what it means to be a self-realized soul. Cultivating the human spirit, again, entails the gradual disappearance of the materialistic ego. Cultivating human spirit is God realization and surrender to God with a full sense of his all-pervasive nature. He keeps saying, cultivation of the human spirit is not a mere adjustment of material anomalies. It's the process for preparing oneself to be promoted to the spiritual kingdom. So suffering may be there. He says, but we have to become like a dry coconut. The pulp becomes separated from its outer skin. So the gross and subtle material coverings of the soul separate from the soul, and the soul can exist in spiritual existence, even though apparently within the dry skin. This freedom from false ego is liberation of the soul. So Birijan, in his lecture on this verse in Australia, he says this type of preaching is to wake everyone up from a dream. Gyani type of preaching. Shake, you're sleeping, and he wants to shake you to wake you up. Wake up, wake up. You're in the shallow water. Don't you see? The water is getting shallower. The water is going to be finished. And where will you go? And where will you be when the water finishes? The water of your life. And so this is to wake up the sleeping souls, this type of preaching. So Prabhupada was going to do this preaching in Japan. That was his first idea. He just took, first idea for preaching was to take this chapter of Bhagavatam and explain it and make pictures of it for the people to understand. And so we finished our verses for today. Any questions or comments on these verses? Yes?
My grandmother was, that was one of her mantras. You will see what will happen when I will not be here anymore.
Yes.
You will see,
your grandmother was saying, you will see what will happen when I am not here anymore.
Everything
depends on her. And what happened after she died?
Or? She died, yeah.
Oh, then what happened?
She was quite right, actually.
Well, she was right.
She was not completely right.
But not 100%. So you must have depended on your grandmother a lot.
Few relatives are crazy, but that was not because...
She came back to possess them as a ghost. That's what I'm saying. You will see what happens. Few relatives went crazy after she left. Yes. So, but the politicians think everything will be lost. They're the ones that Prabhupada is comparing. What will France do without Napoleon? And Prabhupada always says, well, France is here and Napoleon is gone. So France is still going on without Napoleon. And life will go on without us when we leave our bodies. Yes?
Once I was in church and the priest was telling me, and there was a pigeon and he was holding the feet in the air. And then someone asked him, what are you doing? I'm holding up the sky.
Ah, holding up the sky.
And then the fox came and he had to run.
Yeah.
Like people think that they're holding up the sky, but yeah. Then the death comes.
When death comes, then they're finished.
But the sky is still there.
The sky is still there. Yes, that is our... What is your job? Yes, I'm holding up the sky. What is your business?
Sky holding.
Or factory, you know, this whole big business. Actually, Prabhupada, one man came to Srila Prabhupada, he made a big mistake of telling Prabhupada, you know, I have so many worries. I have all these factories, I have all these businesses, and it gives me so much anxiety. Prabhupada said, oh, I will relieve you of your anxiety. Give them to me. Take his address. And he said, no, Swamiji, it's okay. Prabhupada said, no, I will relieve you of your anxiety. Get his address. It was Prabhupada. It was so funny. Yes, no, we know you cannot sleep at night. You have told us you cannot sleep. So I will cure your insomnia for you. Give me one factory, one of your factories. Yes, that is the way. Carrying the burden, trying to swim in the ocean of material existence while carrying all these rocks on your back. So many factories and so many things. If you don't give them to Krishna, if you don't use them for Krishna, or Krishnaize them, then they're like so many rocks and they'll bring you down into the ocean where you will drown. Yes?
In verse 36, you brought the commentaries of Sridhar Swami. What he said, those one who gives knowledge and those one who doesn't give knowledge.
No, he compared to the Gyani, is compared to one who sometimes gives and sometimes doesn't give, and the karmi always gives. So we see the schools are always there. They're always going on. But we don't always find the God consciousness in society being taught. Also. Yes. How to get your nose out of the shallow water?
I mean, at least to swim in deeper waters. If one has material desires, that means the consciousness is material.
Yeah. It's the pure mind is cloudy there, covered with mud, muddy mind. The only way, the only solution is to hold on to somebody who's out of the water and free. And then you can swim holding on to them. They swim and you just hold on. Of course, you also have to maybe kick your feet or something. And you have to hold on. You have to hold on too. Otherwise, if you let go, then you're out. You're gone. Good luck. In the ocean of Kali Yuga, you're going to tread water. Yeah? Let's see. Let's see how it goes. There's a lot of waves in the ocean of Kali Yuga. Might be hard to tread. Holding on to the tail. Yes, and there are some who hold on to the tail of the dog to cross the ocean. The scientists.
Or each other transform into a swan.
Yes. You too, yeah. Okay, well, that's one way of looking at it. You transform into a swan. Another way of looking at it. What's another way? Yes. The ocean shrinks into the water of a calf's hoofprint. If you take shelter of the boat of hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Otherwise, you leave the boat, and the rest of the day you're miserable if you forget. And you're back plunged into the ocean. As soon as you get out of the boat. So the lesson is, don't get out of the boat. Always be chanting and hearing and remembering.
Also, following to acharyas means acharyas leaves the boat behind them.
Right. Acharyas leave the boat behind. And so you have to go and find out who is swimming in the ocean of devotion. Or who has crossed the ocean of material existence and is swimming now in the ocean of devotion. That person you have to find. Very hard, very difficult. Yes. Very good. Yes. Who is following? Yes, Devakananda.
In last class you talked about
back door. Right. More about the back door. That is referring to the verse in Bhagavatam, Nashta Priyesha Padreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. That when, by regularly rendering service to the pure devotee or hearing by regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, all the impurities in the heart become reduced almost to nil. And thus loving service, nishta, comes into effect. So if we can follow the process to such an extent, we have to sincerely follow the process to the extent that we can become, at least on the mode of goodness, then Prabhupada will do the rest. At least try to elevate ourselves, and the process is by Shinvatam Sakata Krishna, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, by serving the pure devotee, and Bhagavatam, hearing and chanting, then all the dirty things are cleansed, also chanting Hare Krishna, and then we come to Nishta, the level of Nishta, firm faith. Firm faith. Now, if you already have firm faith, then no problem. Then everything will be revealed. But if you're still struggling, then you have to try for that firm faith. And the way to get it is by serving the devotee and Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam and the devotee, the holy name. And that much we have to do. That is our part. We must sincerely try to follow the process given to us. Five most potent forms of devotional service. That's hearing, chanting the holy name, hearing Bhagavatam, association of devotees, living in the holy dham, deity worship. Those five. That is our morning program also. Japa, Bhagavatam, deities, association of devotees, in the dham. Yes, Abhay? Yes. But at the same time, we cannot say that Prabhupada was not floating in the ocean of devotion. Even though there were difficulties.
Well, I mean, externally, for our observation, they seem to be...
Yeah, well, the way we look at it, bad health is really miserable. Yeah. It's terrible. We can't do our service, so many obstructions. But the way a pure devotee, when Prabhupada was very sick, and then for 3 days he was tossing and turning with dysentery fever. After it was over, then his servant asked, "Does the pure devotee suffer material miseries?" And Prabhupada's answer was, "It was a lover's bite." So to us it looks like intense suffering. But to Prabhupada it was Krishna biting him. So he was swimming, we're swimming in the ocean of misery, and you know, we get sick, oh, I'm miserable, and it changes our whole consciousness. But when Prabhupada gets sick, and when these pure devotees get sick, it doesn't matter. What analogy that we heard, it was in Burijan's class. Of course, yeah, there's one analogy that's like that, but it's not exactly like that. It's the mountain, all the rain is coming on the mountain, but the mountain stays still. It's unaffected. So yes, their sufferings are there, but at the same time, if you're so absorbed in the spiritual, then you're unaffected by it. For us, it's the opposite. We have our devotional service, but we're so absorbed in the material, we're unaffected by our devotional service half the time. We miss the mercy because we're so absorbed in our material affairs. When you get to the level of ruchi asakti, then you're so absorbed in Krishna that the material things don't disturb you. What may be happening around you, it's instead of a disturbance, it's an impetus for bringing you closer to Krishna. All the impediments become wonderful, like a staircase is described, a staircase leading to Krishna. Each one is a step to Krishna. Closer and closer and closer. So it's a different way of seeing things, that's all. We see, oh, it's terrible, this devotee's suffering, is that? Right? And we also feel it too, when it happens to us. Think, oh, I'm so miserable, and this is, it's too cold, and then.
I agree with what you're saying. Mm. And also, the devotee, in due course of time, he actually realizes that suffering is actually being beneficial.
Yeah. So yeah, after it happens, we don't always appreciate it. Yeah.
What you're saying is a pure devotee is actually very quickly appreciating.
Yeah, immediately. Immediately appreciating. He only appreciates. He only sees mercy. He only sees it as good, as a good thing.
This example is
Kunti Devi. Kunti Devi is an example. Let the calamities come. It was great fun. It was not fun, but at least when we have calamities, you're here. Now we're in our kingdom, you're gone. You're leaving. So better we have calamities. But we should not pray like that at our level of devotional service. We should not pray like that. Especially in Vrindavan. All your desires, huh? I know. So if you want to follow his footsteps, you may pray like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj to have all the suffering come on you, all the suffering of the world. And then very fast he left his body, although he should have lived another 20 years. But that's your choice, that's his choice, and he wanted to do that, so he did that. And but before doing that, what the austerities did he perform? Only once a day his whole life he was eating, and what did he eat once a day? Some little nuts and raisins. Who is going to do that? Who is going to go to the communist countries when they were communist day and night and preach? And he's supposed to be incognito. Well, you know, and he's black and everybody else is white and he's incognito. And he was, and he did it. If you think you can do what he was doing, then go ahead and pray like that. But first you have do the austerities. Do the austerities that he was doing. And yeah.
He was black, a foreigner.
I know. Foreigner and black.
Country.
Well, he suffers, but he follows the rules. He may not be controlled by time, but he follows the rules of time. Just like one time he was on an airplane, he got off the airplane and the reporter asked him, you know, if you have mystic powers, then why do you, you know, take the airplane and why do you pay for air insurance and all these things? So Prabhupada said, to be one with you. Yes.
Maybe one point would be relevant here, that fears pain, but suffering, because suffering is optional.
Yeah.
An optional suffering. But always you feel pain, right?
Yeah.
So if you can understand the pain, Krishna conscious manner will not suffer.
Yes. Have you realized that? You're very young. But yes, your point is well taken. Your point is well taken. That pain, if you realize it, that it has nothing to do with you, and it's just the body, and it's things going on, then yes. And it's Krishna biting you. Then you will not suffer. Yes, it's how you see things. But most of us, if we get a little pained, and we think how to get rid of the pain immediately, what to do, yes? Right. The devotee sees like that. Krishna uses arnathas to purify us. And we get purified, and then hopefully we learn the lesson, and we don't have to get more purified with the same anartha again. If we learn the lesson that we're supposed to learn, then we won't get the same test again. We get another test of another anartha. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.